Hello and welcome back to the Talking Points podcast. If you're listening to us over on Spotify, thank you very much. And thank you very much to everyone who is watching us on YouTube. Hello, welcome. Before we get into the podcast today, I just want to mention, you've been saying quite a lot, Tomo has been missing. He's recently moved house and unfortunately, he's also caught COVID. So we're wishing you all the best, Tomo, and he will be back soon. Don't worry, you'll see him and hopefully Minton very soon once again. But
we might surprise you, yeah, with Minton as well.
Yeah, we're going to get into the podcast now. What are we talking about today?
Just a little news roundup of kind of the big stories in terms of Las Vegas, obviously announced for 2023. Us coming back also to Melbourne for the first time in 2 years. What is that going to be like? So yeah, just a little, as Tomo would say, chin wag ahead of the Australian Grand Prix.
It's been an exciting week recently, especially with the announcements. We'll start off with the announcement of the Las Vegas, which one are we going for?
Something like that.
Below. Grand Prix, third race in the USA in 2023.
A little bit of controversy when that was announced.
Yeah, a lot of people were, some people loved it, some people didn't like it because they're like, oh, why are we having three races in the US? What are your thoughts on it? Do you think that three races in the US is too much?
I mean, considering we have probably like, off the top of my head, what is it, like 10 or 12 races in Europe. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm not too kind of against having more races in the US. And I think three is a pretty nice number. I also think that although we haven't been to Miami just yet, I feel like Austin, Miami, Las Vegas, it's kind of different vibes. You know, it's also a different kind of circuits. Like COTA is a proper like track. Mm-hmm. Like it's used for loads of different series. Obviously, Las Vegas is going to be a bit more of a street track. So yeah, it's kind of different vibes, which I quite like. But yeah, the thing for me I always go back to is just the calendar getting bigger and bigger. And also what track is going to get left out? Because
yeah,
there's a lot of tracks that I wish could come back, like, you know, the likes of the Nürburgring and Hockenheim as well. So that's the only bit that I kind of have a bit of a reservation about in terms of what's going to get put off. And also just the amount of races. I mean, this calendar is getting bigger and bigger. And I've always said this kind of under the cost cap, the teams, it just puts more stress on them, especially definitely. When they can't hire more people. So that's my one worry. But I am actually excited to go there. I feel like the track looks interesting in terms of like, it was always going to be difficult, especially if you're doing a street track in America. I mean, most of their streets are like 90 degree corners anyway, which is like absolute hell to most F1 fans. But from what they could actually do, you know, the limitations, I feel like it looks like quite a quick track. It definitely actually is a quick track from what they've said. So I am excited to go there. And also the time as well. It's going to be a Saturday night race in terms of the UK.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a bit different as well. I'm going to give it a chance and I'm actually excited.
For once, we're going to have to get up in Europe at like 3 a.m. in the morning. It's going to be weird for us. You know, we moan when it's a 6 a.m. race for Australia, but we're going to actually have to get used to an earlier one. You mentioned that, you know, there's US is a big country, but why maybe have we not had races? There's the argument for Australia's just about the same size. You've also got China and India who have a bigger population. Why do you think, you know, it's still acceptable for us to go to the US for more races?
This is purely commercial. This is purely almost a bullseye for Formula One in terms of marketing and to really get into the USA. There's no doubt about it. I even read somewhere that they don't even have a promoter for this. Like, usually what happens with the race is that
itself.
Exactly. Formula One are literally putting down the money themselves, which they take all of the risk, but they take all of the reward as well. So they're really, Stefano Domenicali and the team over there, they're clearly pushing because they want to get into that American market. They still want to break it. And clearly they think that Las Vegas is the way to go, even if the race doesn't, you know, I think it's going to be more about the spectacle, you know, building up Formula One, no doubt. Drive to Survive will be there for sure. So yeah, it is purely financial. That's why they're going for another race there. They want to kind of keep growing the brand of Formula One in the US. But at the same time, we also got to think about the race. Like the race still has to deliver. And hopefully with these new regs, obviously a year into the race, by the time we get there, hopefully that'll be kind of even better.
Well, I agree with you on all of that, in all fairness. And I was throwing the questions.
Good, as you should.
But yeah, and there's a lot of arguments for, you know, why are we going three races in US? Why are we not going here? Why are we not going here? Let's stay in Europe where the popularity is. Yeah, it's always been in Europe. Okay, we've always had, Formula One has been most popular in Europe with some other countries here and there. But the US market is growing. It dropped down a lot after 2005, but since 2012, and obviously Drive to Survive has helped massively. You just have to look at the spectator attendances for the US Grand Prix over the last few years, and it's just doubling and doubling.
Ridiculous.
So to go to Miami, it's going to be packed. Miami is going to be huge for Formula One, and we go there in a couple of races time. I'm very excited to see what it's going to be like. That one's more sort of a purpose-built street circuit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rather than Vegas, which, like you say, is just going
like,
to be on a street,
basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, yeah, Vegas is a different story again. It's on the streets. It's not like we're going to three states that are right next to each other, or we go into California three times or something like that. And I know there are some great tracks in the US that I'd love us to go to. Laguna Seca, although the corkscrew in F1 car, I don't know how that would happen. It's just mental.
I want to see it anyway.
Yeah, you've got stuff like Watkins Glen and Road Atlanta, great circuits, but you know, Vegas is going to be a big party city. And like you say, it's all commercial. And that's what Formula One is at the end of the day. It's a business. And yeah, I'm disappointed that maybe, you know, some tracks that we love from the past are sort of put to the side and we're never really going to go to them again. And unfortunately, maybe we're going to lose some tracks, but maybe we're not because there's rumors that Stefano wants 30 races in a calendar, which is mental.
He didn't outright say I want 30, but it's just the way he said it. He didn't brush it off. He was just like, it was kind of like a little comment that he made, like, yeah, we could have 30 races if the promoters are happy. And it's like, I saw this on Twitter quite a lot. Although he didn't outright say it, you don't just put that sort of comment out there as like, you know, the king of Formula One, the guy who absolutely runs the business, as like, yeah, you know, 30 races, we can do it, no problem. But again, he's trying to grow that American market. And even I've seen actually with my own channel, I've looked at the analytics, my biggest viewers is US. Mm. Like, that is my biggest, like, the viewership base, which I found just staggering. Like, I did not realize that until I like, looked at it. So the US market is growing in Formula One. And yeah, again, I'm actually really excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Welcome to Aldous's US viewership, by the way. We got that at the end. I couldn't really speak.
Producer Matt's fuming.
Yeah. but I feel like three is the limit for me. I feel like if it starts to go four or five, it becomes too much because there's competition as well for other racing series. IndyCar is a big thing out there, but NASCAR is huge. NASCAR is huge over in the US. So there is
a bit of
competition between all of these different sort of, and I know there's a few sort of American drivers that aren't particularly too happy because I feel like F1's kind of treading on their toes. And I can understand it from their point of view. If they're like the superstars in US motorsport and then Formula One comes over there and people are less interested in NASCAR and IndyCar and go over to Formula One, it's going to be hard for obviously their careers.
It's always a mix in terms of potentially getting those American series like NASCAR and IndyCar. There's definitely been a bigger connection to Formula One and IndyCar, I feel like, with McLaren especially. Mm-hmm. Obviously they have both of their race teams, and I feel like that is what Formula One, they're going into the States, but they don't want to almost like step on the toes of those series. They're trying to raise them up, but there's a very thin line. And obviously, like you said, I'm sure some of those drivers are probably not too happy to see Formula One kind of be grown in the States because it kind of maybe lowers the platform of their series.
Because I'd love to see stuff like IndyCar and Formula One on the same weekend, like as a support series, but I don't think they'd be happy being known as a support series at the end of the day. They want to be the spectacle. Same with NASCAR. NASCAR wouldn't be happy being on the same weekend. Say we went to like an Indianapolis or something like that, where we have F1 on the infield circuit and then NASCAR takes over on the outfield circuit or something like that.
I never actually thought that, but that would be quite, I would like to see that. I totally get what
you mean.
It would be so cool. It would be so cool, yeah.
I just don't think it would ever happen because they'd be like, we are not number two to Formula One. We are number one here. You know, you're coming over here, you're stepping on our turf. Like, back off.
I'm also looking forward for you to drive it as well on whatever simulator. You can give us the actual
details. I can let you know what. I think there's one made, so I need to jump on it in the next couple of weeks on Las Vegas and see what it's like. And let's talk about the track, actually, because it's a very simple circuit, which a lot of people aren't happy with. But one thing I will say is we went to Sakhir, we did the oval of Bahrain, and it was a lot of fun. So let's give it a go. That's what I'm going to say. Let's give it a go. And if it is rubbish, then we can say it's rubbish.
But and also, we have not even raced there, but I can tell you for a fact it's going to be better than the last two races that F1 had in Las Vegas. And like, I think it was like 1981 and 1982.
What, in the car park?
It was the Caesars Grand Prix or something like that. Go on Google right now and type in like the Caesars Grand Prix and look at the track. Oh my God. This is not like, it is honestly one of the top five worst tracks in Formula One history, maybe even top three. It's absolutely terrible. So yeah, it can't get any. And also the tarmac actually broke up as the cars were driving over it. So it can't get any worse than that, let's be honest.
It can't. And we're going to have some great views as well going down the strip and seeing the, you know, all the casinos and all of that and the lights. And it's just going to be a big party atmosphere. And yeah, I am thoroughly looking forward to it.
I can't wait.
And I won't judge it until we've seen it.
Exactly.
Moving on now, it's the Australian Grand Prix this weekend. And we've been talking about tracks. We've got another track to talk about because there are a couple of track changes to talk about, mainly the widening of the track. I think it's becoming now, because I looked at a few pictures. There was a guy that I saw on Twitter was out there, had a little track walk.
Yeah.
And it looks more like a street circuit now. The barriers, there used to be like a bit of grass runoff and then the barriers were there. Okay, it's not much because if you touch that grass, it's going to be slippery. You're going to end up in the wall most likely. But now the wall is there. So it's now become basically a street circuit.
See, that surprises me because, like, one of the things that they're trying to do, and by the way, we all know that the middle sector has been basically, like, they've cut out the chicanes mm-hmm. and they've kind yeah. of really tried to make it more flowing. But there's also little minor changes I saw as well. Even, like, turn three is being widened.
Yeah, just a lot of the corners have.
Very small changes to make it a little bit wider. I know in the third sector, there's, like, a right-hander. They're also making that a little bit wider. So they're trying to make the track a little bit more flowing. And I actually think that maybe they have kind of replaced some of the barriers yeah. and I don't know what kind of work they've done. But with these new cars, I actually think they might be going away from it. I think they want... Even though it is a street track, I think they're trying to make it more of a track than just a street track because mm-hmm. these cars are bigger, they're wider. But I am, even just on a basic level, I am so excited to go back to Melbourne because I've even got loads of mates, Sam, Perspective on YouTube, he's going out there as well. Sold out crowd on Saturday and Sunday, 120,000. There's still a few restrictions in Australia with COVID and everything, but sold out for both of those 2 days. So much excitement. And I've just had even random messages, people literally asking me, when we went to Bahrain, am I going to Australia?
Yeah,
like, and I'd just say, oh no, but I want to. It's absolutely my bucket list. But yeah, I'm so excited just to go, and Australia's always a vibe. It will always be the beginning of the season to me.
Yeah, it's a very exciting place to go. And to go back to the track changes, it's turn one's widened, turn three is widened, the end of sector two, that's widened as well. Obviously, we've got rid of that chicane in the middle sector. Yeah. What would be the fourth DRS zone, we'll get to that in a sec.
We'll get to that in a bit,
the fourth DRS zone, that's now longer, the straight, and it's more of a tighter right-hander, making it a better overtaking zone because you have to really get on the brakes now.
Yeah.
So it's a bigger braking zone, being widened as well, and I think the penultimate corner has also been widened too. So a lot of chance goes side by side. I think it's a track that is now looked at what the regulations we're going to be getting and seeing how can we adapt to that. We feel like these cars are going to be able to follow closer, we don't need to have as many braking zones, we can go into corners that are a bit more fast and flowing and really make not only the race a spectacle but also the qualifying too, because you know we love to watch hot laps when cars are flying high speed through corners. It's beautiful.
And also something else actually about that track is that I think I said this about Abu Dhabi last year as well, is that I like that they've made changes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they had that year out where they couldn't have it because of COVID, and they were proactive in making changes, just like Abu Dhabi, and that's something that I'm really happy about because I do want Australia to be a long and permanent fixture on the F1 calendar. So I think it's going to be really good there either way because I think the drivers are going to be excited there. There's so many... Even just away from the track, there's still so many storylines. We don't know who's going to be quicker out of Red Bull or Ferrari, what all the other teams are going to be like as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of expectation and hopefully it delivers.
Now, the other track change that they've made, four DRS zones, which is quite fitting because we were talking about DRS in the last podcast. So they listened to that clearly, and said, let's not take away DRS zones. What they want is more DRS zones. Again, I'm not gonna bash on it too much because it could work. If these cars need DRS to overtake, it's going to give us hopefully more overtakes. Australia's been known for not having that many overtakes in its race.
I believe, again, I saw this on Twitter, so this is not confirmed, but for the race lead, there's only ever been one legitimate like on-track overtake with like Schumacher and Montoya.
Amazing.
That is it.
Absolutely amazing. But now we could potentially have more because the DRS zones, again, are back-to-back of each other. We could see something similar like we have with DRS Chicken. That could happen again.
I mean, you're a big fan of that.
I am a big fan of it. I don't mind it too much until it becomes dangerous. But I think that could happen, especially as there's multiple opportunities in the lap. There is literally, you know, you go down turn one, you get them into turn one, they get you back down into turn three. And then you follow through the next section. And then you get them back in DRS zone three, they get you back in DRS four. And it could be a case of a battle that goes on a whole lap,
but
also a whole race. Because you could just become back and forth. And it could be very interesting to see not only two drivers going head-to-head, or hopefully more, but also tactics that come into play with that as well. So I'm going into it with an open mind.
I'm always kind of interested also where the DRS detection point is as well, mm-hmm. because I feel like the drivers, especially Max, I saw something about this, but he's almost learning now with this kind of brand new DRS battles in terms of like even in Australia, it's probably not even worth overtaking someone into turn one because you just follow them through turn one and then you overtake them again through that second DRS. So there's a lot of kind of brand new games that are being played in some of the drivers that are kind of adapting to not only the cars, but also the racing. But yeah, I mean, four DRS zones seems a little bit over the top in my opinion, but we're going to see how it works. You never know. Maybe we're still going to get no overtaking. Ultimately, obviously, we're super excited. There's a lot of hope for it, but you never know.
You never know. I'm excited, and I think
6 o'clock in the morning as well.
Yeah, I might have to go visit my girlfriend in the Netherlands and make it 7 a.m. Then it's a bit better.
Good excuse.
But yeah, I'm excited for it. I can't wait to see what happens. And hopefully it does mean more on-track overtakes and also battles, because the corners that they are on, you know, if somebody's diving down the inside of turn one, you can do what Charles does, back off a little bit, hold off. And then, you know, you're going to get that switchback maneuver. They're going to be compromised on the inside. And it's same again for the other one, because it's another chicane. So if they're on the inside, they can't take that. It's a fast chicane as well. Yeah. It's going to be slower this year because the cars aren't as good aerodynamically. But it's still a fast chicane, so you're going to compromise the other cars. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be an exciting race. Do we think there's going to be Ferrari Red Bull again?
I do. I think it's too early for Mercedes in terms of like going into the weekend. I think what's exciting actually is that we don't know who's going to be quicker out of Ferrari and Red Bull, because even though Red Bull were a little bit quicker on the straight in terms of their top speed, I think that was actually more of a compromise setup in terms of that's where the car is in its happy window. Even though we talk about Mercedes having these issues, I think Ferrari and Red Bull still do have them to a certain extent. It's just not as much. So I still don't know who's going to be quicker. Obviously, Ferrari were very impressive in terms of getting out of the corners a bit more downforce, but it's a quicker track. So does that swing the momentum back to Red Bull? I mean, you just never know. And I'm still excited actually to see the number two drivers. What can Sainz do? Because so far, Verstappen and Leclerc have kind of stole the championship. You know, they're the two title protagonists, but Checo kind of bounced back a little bit and had an unlucky race. And obviously Sainz kind of still needs to kind of start his season. So I think I'm looking forward to that more than anything else, maybe.
Do you know what I'm looking forward to the most as well, though? That there is Live Fast branding at the Australian Grand Prix, which we didn't even have to pay for because they just decided to do the same thing as us. So thank you very much, Australian GP.
Free promotion. You love to see it.
If only they could have sent us free tickets as well. Maybe next year. We love you, Oz. Please send us out there.
Exactly.
Mercedes, though, I believe are bringing upgrades to the Australian Grand Prix. So it'll be interesting to see, one, whether they work, and two, what they look like, because, you know, they drastically changed the side pods of their car for the first two races. To see how closely they can step up to the field if they do work. Because at the moment, how far off would you rate them? I'd say maybe like 8/10.
Yeah. I mean, something that's quite like that. A big gap.
It is.
6 or 8/10, I mean, in qualifying easily. I mean, even when you look at Saudi Arabia, I mean, I think it was Esteban Ocon. He's still out-qualified George Russell.
Yeah.
So that midfield is so close and right on their heels that Mercedes can't kind of just... They can't just kind of chill out and go, yeah, we're best of the rest. So it's going to be interesting going to Australia, because that is a Mercedes kind of like, that's their kind of almost home track for the turbo hybrid era. I think they've been on pole in every single race in the turbo hybrid era.
Even the ones when Ferrari were on top?
I think so, yeah, because Ferrari did win a few. That's the only thing.
Because they got them through virtual safety cars, didn't they? Yes,
exactly. Yes. So Seb kind of bounced back a little bit and kind of won a few of those. But yeah, Mercedes have been on pole in every single one of them. Is that going to continue? I mean, that'd be kind of a crazy weekend if it does, if both Lewis or George can pull something out. But yeah, this season is still so fresh because the cars, some teams are still on the back foot. I'm very excited to see what McLaren and Daniel Ricciardo can do. That's a lot of pressure for Ricciardo. Yeah. Obviously, he didn't have the best of starts of the season and didn't exactly have a great race last time out. But Australians don't tend to do that well at the Australian Grand Prix. So there's going to be a bit of pressure on him. But
he's got a podium before, but then he got disqualified for the car.
Unlucky.
He got a P4 in 2018, 2017,
I believe. Yeah, 2018, yeah.
Obviously, the last one we went to in 2019 didn't end well. He got taken out by some grass, broke his front wing, and then resulted in a DNF. But, you know, I don't think there should be too much pressure set on him for this weekend. I don't expect Ricciardo to be up fighting winning and on podiums and stuff like that. It did look positive for Saudi Arabia, but Lando was very much, you know, putting the optimism down. He wasn't optimistic about just that one performance, because there was only 13 finishes in that race. That's obviously something that you have to put into it. And they were saying they're slow on the straights and they're slow in slow speed corners.
Great.
So no Monza wins this year.
But at least the track is a little bit quicker. So maybe
maybe it can suit them a bit better. Maybe they can be fighting. Because I'd love to see them, you know, it's weird to say, I'd love to see McLaren fighting for points on the trajectory they've been on over the last few years. So it's kind of a big step back. But Ricciardo did a decent job in Saudi Arabia. He was on par with Lando. Unfortunately, we can't say he was going to beat him or he wasn't, because he DNF'd about halfway through the race. So it's an annoying thing, but I would have loved to have seen him done better than Lando, especially after coming back from COVID. Would have been great to see that, you know, McLaren have got two top quality drivers, and if they can get that car right, they can be straight up there. But yeah, unfortunately for Ricciardo, I feel like it's going to be another home Grand Prix where he's having to wait to get onto that podium and it be legit.
And also someone who's actually going to be starting their season, Sebastian Vettel.
Yes.
Returning, obviously, Nico Hülkenberg. He's done his shift. I'm not quite sure how Seb is going to feel.
Back in the cupboard.
Exactly. He's back in the cupboard. Not quite sure how Seb is going to feel jumping into that Aston Martin in terms of what he's seen so far. But how do you think that's going to go? Because obviously, even coming off the back of COVID, I mean, even he's going to kind of, I think, be a bit on the back foot. He's not going to come back at 100%. But yeah, the car's not doing great. The team, obviously, last time out, that collision with Albon as well. It's not a great start to Aston Martin. So how do you think Seb is going to feel jumping back into that situation?
Well, I don't know, because to be fair, some drivers, when they've got COVID, have come back with a bang. I mean, Perez got it. He won in Sakhir in that season.
A little bit later in the season,
but he still had his performances were unreal.
Yeah,
that season. You also look at Ricciardo; he got COVID and he's come back, and he was
DNF'd.
He DNF'd, but he was off the pace of Lando for a lot of last season, and you know, in the last couple of races, you can't really say he's been massively off the pace.
I think it affects different drivers differently.
Yeah, exactly. Lewis Hamilton, I'd probably say one that was affected. Abu Dhabi.
Yeah,
I don't know whether that was probably because Red Bull were better at Abu Dhabi at that point as well.
He did talk about, even at the beginning of 2021, actually still feeling a little bit of
I think it was like Hungary. He was really like taken aback from it. So hopefully Vettel is going to be more on the side of like Ricciardo and Checo and be able to bounce back. But I mean, that car is dreadful. It is absolutely dreadful. Hülkenberg's jumped into it, done a fantastic job, but you can't really do anything. That's literally all you can do. Keep it out the barriers and beat the Williams. That's your job. And that's going to be Vettel's job, really, when he jumps in the car, because that's what him and Stroll are basically there to do.
Do you think it's
just to beat Williams?
For the dynamic of the team, though, do you think it's important for Stroll to kind of almost capitalize on this situation? Because Seb missing two races, kind of Stroll's more up to speed. Seb is going to be a bit on the back foot.
I don't think so, because what I'd rather like to see is those two working together to get this car up to the top as quickly as they possibly can. Yeah. Because Vettel's got a ticking time clock, you know. How old is he now? 34. So he's got a ticking time clock. He's on, you know, and a lot of people say he's going to retire. I don't know. I feel like Vettel's got the passion to race. He loves racing. He loves being in Formula One. So I think he's got the passion to still be there.
Does he love racing in the back of the grid, though?
I don't think he does. But I mean, he kind of did it for a bit last season, because Aston Martin weren't great last season. They had highlights, but they also had a lot of lowlights as well. So it's a long 5-year plan, okay? And they have openly said that. They're having these awesome facility campus built purposely for them. And then once that's all finished, that's when they're going to really start to be like, okay, now we need to start to step it up. But at the moment, you know, they are just kind of hanging in there, waiting for all this to happen. And yeah,
just chilling.
I just hope that both of them can work together. Like, there's no sort of rivalry between them. I know there's a lot of, well, I say rivalry, I think it's a lot of Sebastian Vettel.
They did come together a few times last year.
Come together a few times last year. They need to calm that down. But I think there's a lot of Vettel fans who, you know, are diehard Vettel fans and hate anyone who comes close to their boy. But I just hope that they can both work together and whatever happens, happens, because it's in a season where
it's a tricky start.
They're fighting for 12th, and it's just going to be when they get lucky to get into points, I think, this season. And, you know, I don't think we're going to see Vettel, you know, on the podium twice this year.
You never know.
Or, I mean, I'd love to see it. Or on, you know, that P5 from Monaco. I just can't see that happening unless it's a lucky stroke in a pit stop in Monaco.
It's still early in the season, though. It's still so early in the season that I think that's what we're excited about, in terms of things are changing from race to race so much. We don't know where that Aston Martin's going to be by the time we get to, like,
true,
the US or Abu Dhabi. So yeah, still a long way to go, but I'm looking forward to seeing what Seb can do in that Aston Martin, because, you know, he is the kind of number one driver. He's going to be the barometer in terms of where is that car really at the moment.
Well, it's for him as well, because you don't want to be beaten by Lance Stroll, because I think if you are, then it's
not a good look.
It's a great look, because Lance is amazing. But it would just look like your career is coming to an end, unfortunately, because, you know, Alonso jumped back in the car. Everyone's like, oh yeah, he doesn't deserve this seat. But, you know, he beat Ocon on points. He had a fantastic season and he was no slouch. You know, him and Ocon were very close in qualifying.
I think they're going to be close again.
They're going to be close again. And they were close in the races as well. So they were both on par. Whereas, you know, I think with Stroll and Vettel last season, it was very much both were on a roller coaster, but the roller coasters were on different wavelengths. So he needs to be beating Stroll because he's a four-time world champion. Like, there is pressure on him. However, it's very difficult to do that when the best result you could have the race of your life. Everyone's finished the race and you finish P12.
Yeah, P12. Like,
that's the problem. Whereas, you know, Stroll could be having a rubbish race, but there's only 10 finishes because it's crazy and he gets P9 and he beats you in the championship. So, yeah, it's something that we're going to have to wait and see over the course of the season. But like you say, there's a long season ahead of us, 23 races, a lot of development for the cars. We've heard it before from other teams where they've got different cars in the wind tunnels to what they're currently running because they are going to be improving over this season. Do I think that they can get up there and fight for the championship? No. Do I think that they can hopefully get into the points and be a regular points finisher? Yeah, I think it's capable. But what does worry me and makes me not get too optimistic is that they haven't really got, I mean, they've got facilities, but they haven't got what they want at the moment. So they're not being able to operate like other teams.
It's a lot. Yeah, it is a long-term project. And I feel like Aston Martin at the moment, again, with Seb returning, they just need to kind of wait it out and just do their own thing, you know, develop the car however they can. And yeah, again, it's a long-term thing.
I think that's a good way to end on though. But before we do that, who's going to win in Australia?
Put me on the spot.
I am.
I'm going to go Max Verstappen.
You're going Max Verstappen.
I think he's going to go back to back. There's a bit of negativity there from Mr. Producer. It is going to be Max Verstappen.
Shake of the head.
A shake
do
of
you
the
know
head.
What? Carlos Sainz. Come on, boy.
Ooh,
come on, boy.
I like that.
Get the race win, finally. And get yourself in that championship battle. I'd like to see that. That's the one for me.
As long as we get a bit of battling and maybe once again for the race lead, I'm going to be happy.
As long as we get more than one race lead overtake, it's a world record and we are happy.
George Russell on the podium as well.
Just ticking off the list.
Just ticking up. Alonso points.
Anything else?
No, I'm done.
Okay. Lance Stroll top five. Right, that is going to round out this episode of the Talking Points podcast. Thank you very much, everyone who's listening to us over on Spotify or other audio apps, I think
platforms.
That's platforms, best way to describe that. If you are listening to us on Spotify, though, please make sure that you rate us 5 stars. It really helps us out and we really appreciate it. And of course, if you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button for more of this and the other awesome content that we do. And Tomo will be back, so you can get ready for that. But until next time, it's goodbye from us.
Bye.
Enjoy the Australian Grand Prix and getting up really early. Bye.